Certainly try to. Good morning, everyone. Great privilege to be here. I'm going to talk a bit about some of the things that we do to try and make sure consumers know we exist and how we do that and why we think that's appropriate. And I'm going to talk a bit about how consumer expectations are changing and what that means for us as an ombudsman service. So, trigger happy. Okay, it doesn't want to look at my first slide. The first slide says we're an ombudsman service that's required to be fair and reasonable. We're impartial and independent and all those good things. I think most people in the room are relatively familiar with the Financial Ombudsman Service as a scheme. So you didn't miss out on too much by not seeing that first slide. My second slide is just to give you some feel for the sort of volumes of complaints that we're now seeing as an ombudsman service, which I'm almost desensitized to, but can still nearly shock myself with the true horror of some of the volumes. So about 2 million inquiries last year. So that's about 7,000 every working day. 500,000 new cases last year. That's been about the same for the last 2 years, actually. About 70% of that is our favourite three-letter acronym of payment protection insurance. Anybody in the room buy payment protection insurance, by the way? No, no one's going to. Adam looked like he might have done, I don't know.
I don't know, you see.
You don't, yeah. It's always worth checking. Okay, so that's the big driver of volume, but nonetheless busier than we've ever been before. And sort of just picking up on something that people were talking about earlier, about 85% of those are resolved without us needing to put them through to the formal final stage of our process, so through to an ombudsman. So about 85% settled earlier on in the process. I think it's worth saying as well that we provide information and handle inquiries in over 45 different languages and formats. So obviously a big need for us to do so, but that's a really big part of our accessibility as a service. Ooh, for some reason, I'm getting two slides at once. If I use that, I'm going to go... Technology problems, right. I'm going to abandon the clicky thing. It's not working for me. This is a bit of information about who complains to us. So this goes back to 2007, as you can probably see. There's a little bit more information in the paper. And what you see from this is that actually we have seen quite reasonable growth in terms of the C1, C2 skilled and semi-skilled group, but actually relatively stubborn proportions around the DE group, unskilled group, which remains a concern for us, actually. So that's something that, I mean, I think the first thing with some of this is to know what's happening and then to try and understand why. Some of this, of course, relates to the financial products that people hold. So that is a big factor in why we see complaints from different groups. But I think there's more for us to do to understand a bit more about that. And another dynamic is the age of consumers that come to us, where you'll see, for example, the darkish bluey purple. About a quarter of our complaints, just less than a quarter of our complaints from the over 65s, which is a pretty significant proportion, really. That's for a mixture of reasons. One is that a portion of our caseload is about things like pensions and investments, and it tends to be that people come to complain about those things in later life, but actually it also represents quite a big growth in the number of people complaining about payment protection insurance that are in that older age group. Actually very stubborn, the under 25s, particularly area we've been looking at recently that's been in the news quite a lot, it's payday lending. And I'm told, and some of you all in the room may be able to tell me, that people in Oxford are quite concerned about the number of students who are taking payday loans. Now, our proportion of people who complain about payday loans actually is very low for the under 25s. Now, there may be many, many reasons for that, but I think part of the journey to trying to engage with the right people is about understanding who's complaining and why. So, because we know all of that, we spend some time, relatively limited number of our staff, but important feature of what we do, reaching out, trying to get out round the country. Obviously, we're based in London, but as you'll see from my lovely map, we try and get all round the country if we can. So this is where we hosted events last year and took part in about 150 seminars and events as well. We took part in a recent event for the over 50s consumer event, had a stand there. This is just a picture of various of my staff out in the real world on the coalface talking to real people, or in some cases just waiting for real people to approach them. We attended, I think one of the pictures is from the Birmingham Mellor, which is a fantastic event where just lots and lots of people come together with, for all sorts of different things, and we had a stall there. So we do a range of things to try and make sure that people know who we are. And our awareness levels are pretty high. I think over 70% of UK adults would say they know who the Financial Ombudsman Service is. But that doesn't mean that they'll pick up the phone to us. So knowing about us and coming to us are two very different things. So there's lots more work for us to do. I don't know if you can read those. It's slightly difficult writing to read, aren't they? The essence of what all of that says, you may be able to read them, you may not, is that actually these are just quotes from individual consumers about how they felt about complaining. And I'm going to talk a bit more about that word felt and feelings in just a moment. Make all the lawyers in the room feel uncomfortable by talking about feelings. I can say that because I'm a lawyer too, so it's okay. So I think what we see more and more is that people have a real frustration with needing to interact with bureaucracy. People really struggle with forms. People really struggle with the idea that, you know, someone on high is just going to tell them what to do. So I think we really are seeing some really quite profound changes in the way that people behave and what they expect from a modern ombudsman service. And we as ombudsmen have to be ready to respond to that. And none of that is about being a consumer champion. None of that is about compromising the independence of being an ombudsman. But it is about listening to what people say and being able to respond to that, which I think is absolutely crucial. So as I was saying, increasingly people say to us, but I just want you to tell them that, you know, I was angry. And complaint handling systems, as a general rule, don't handle that very well, because complaint handling systems look for the thing that they can award redress about. And our system's no different to that in some instances. And it's something I know financial businesses really struggle with, because their customers are saying, yeah, but I was just angry. And they're saying, but do you want the £50 or not? And there's just this mismatch between people's expectations and what they really want and what sometimes complaint handling systems can deliver. So this is a bit of what does the future look like. A brief plug for some work that we've been doing recently with an organisation called the Future Foundation, which some of you may have heard about. I won't say too much because we haven't published it yet, but we're publishing in the next couple of weeks. And here are just some of the themes that are starting to emerge from that, but won't be very surprising. I suspect there's lots of really interesting stuff to follow in the report, but big data is a huge thing that's really come through, and how that's going to change people's relationships. Let me give a really good, salient example from our world. So insurance companies, quite a lot of the disputes we see, all the disputes we used to see as the insurance ombudsman and still see today, are about a lovely subject of non-disclosure. So did you tell the truth to your insurance company, and they're now rejecting your claim because they say you didn't tell them about their about your medical history? Yeah, quite a familiar topic, quite an emotive topic. Increasingly, consumers might think, but you know that already, because that data's there. You have that information, so why do I have to tell you? So how does that change that fundamental dynamic between consumers, the financial businesses or other industry sectors that they're interacting with, and how all of that plays together, I think is going to be really interesting. And people's expectations about how industries will meet their needs based on the data they have. Of course, the other side of that, concerns around privacy, how that data's treated, and whether people are looking after it, will also create its own issues, I think. We talked already quite a lot this morning about collective knowledge and the platform that technology gives to people. I must say to Chris that I think at least half of the hits for the site about us are from my own staff, so I think you need to probably bear that mind in your research. But certainly, and as I'm going to talk about an example in just a moment, you know, it's a really powerful tool now. And one of the things that I think as ombudsman we have to be really cognizant of is people can solve their problems without coming anywhere near us. I'll give you a brief example from my sector. A couple of years ago, one of the big banks, HSBC, it was in the public domain, so I shall name them, HSBC changed one of the features of its student accounts. I can't remember the exact change that they made. And they decided that they were going to make this change, and they gave notice. Now, if they complained to us, we probably would have said, well, you know, not much doing, they're entitled to make that change. But they didn't complain to us because they were students. So what they did instead was they took to Twitter and said, we hate HSBC, they're a disgrace, this is a disaster, and within 2 days they'd reversed the policy. So, I think we have to be really aware of these other factors and other ways people will solve their problems. But again, the flip side of some of that, so the empowered consumers you might think of and that we've talked about a bit already this morning, is the sort of ever-growing gap between those consumers and the non-empowered consumer. I think colleagues were touching on this issue earlier and how we as ombudsman can help to bridge that gap, as ADR providers bridge that gap and help people to find the resolution, the justice that they need and deserve. So this is just a brief, but the future is now story. So this is just a pretty picture of our Twitter feed. So like any good modern service, we have, again, a very small number of people who spend a bit of time interacting with consumers and others on Twitter when people take to there to express their frustrations. But let me give you a brief case study, if you will, about the changing way in which people are using social media, how that impacts on us. So we had a case about just over a year ago. You might even remember hearing about it. So a insurance company decided that it was going to turn down a claim from a gentleman who was making a claim for critical illness. They said, reference my previous story, you didn't tell us the truth about your medical history when you took out this policy. And the guy was suffering from terminal cancer. And before the claim was actually concluded, he died, leaving behind two young children and a wife. And his wife then carried on with the complaint to the financial business. And they said, no, we're not paying the claim. Representatives on behalf of the family took to Twitter and said, this is unfair. This is outrageous. Certain well-known celebrities took up the cause and retweeted this. And before very long, this had gathered quite considerable amount of momentum. And, you know, people openly tweeting, this is unfair, firm must do something about this. I'm just saying firm, even though it was, in fact, in the public domain. You might think, well, what does the financial business do at that point? Well, how many of you think, at this point, financial business thinks, gosh, this is getting very embarrassing. I think I'll just pay the claim. How many people think they did that? Hands up. Be brave in your choices. Come on. Okay, a few of you. How many of you think they thought, no, standing by our guns, we are right, and I'm going to let the ombudsman decide? Show of hands. Okay, well, the second lot are right. Some of you didn't vote, which is very, very cowardly of you, by the way. So the second lot of rights, which you might think is a bit extraordinary, part of the reason I think that they decided that was because they thought there was a broader principle at play about non-disclosure. And the insurance industry is very excited about that. And they thought this was, you know, the thin end of some wedge, so they couldn't possibly give in. Case came to us. And actually, while the case was with us, because of all the attention that it had received, people were phoning up our contact centre, who had nothing to do with the case, saying, oh, I just wondered if you'd tell me how that's going. You just... And people were tweeting, and people were saying things like, I'm sure the Ombudsman will have regard to what we all think, and we all reckon it's unfair. Interesting. Now, We decided, please finish, I'm doing it. We decided, actually, that the case should be upheld. We told the business that. It settled it. It didn't go for a formal decision. But the point of the story is, actually, when I tell that story about, you know, should we think about what those people thought? Well, that's quite interesting. Is that a modern version of the Clapham Omnibus? Maybe. Now, all my ombudsmen say, but they didn't know the facts. Indeed. But I think, you know, all of these things we need to think about and how they affect us. So I'm going to finish because a sign said, please finish, and just sum up, really. So I hope that's been a helpful canter through some of the issues that we see very much at the coalface and how things are changing. I think there's a huge responsibility on us as ombudsmen to engage with consumers, particularly vulnerable consumers who don't easily find us without help to do so. And I think we all have to be cognizant of the changes that are happening around us and ready to respond to them. Thank you.